A lot of women are holding both the physical weight of the things that have gone wrong, as well as this guilt and this other weight. And they often feel not heard, blamed.
The paradigm with PCOS is, hey, you have this stuff going on because you're overweight. So it's your fault. Is that right?
Women with PCOS could do a water fast, 3 days of water, and gain weight.
Wow.
So it is clearly not calories in versus calories out. So it's not a moral failing of the patient, it's a medical failing of the provider. I wanted the women with this condition to let go of any self-imposed guilt.
We had 10,000 shares with women doing like prayer hands, right, or high fives, or because they are experiencing real relief and real increases in their quality of life. Keep hope. It's not your fault. And from my perspective, you've got to be the CEO of your own health. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of FastFit and The Perfect Workout. Last week, a few Instagram clips of my conversation with Kimberly Cunningham crossed 3 million views. Thousands of women wrote in, some in tears, some with hard questions. So we're going to go deeper today. But first, I want to read Kimberly's background because we've had a lot of people ask questions about you. And so I'm just going to go into this because it's long and impressive. Kimberly is a board-certified nurse practitioner, providing healthcare in Colorado for over 25 years. She started Cunningham Clinic with a focus on functional medicine and healthy aging after suffering a life-changing injury that left her immobile for years. Her own recovery was achieved utilizing hormone replacement therapy. She now teaches other providers how to integrate hormone therapies and functional medicine into their own practices. Kimberly holds multiple degrees and study concentrations from the University of Florida, South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, and the University of Colorado. She is currently on the faculty of two universities, an educator for BioT Medical, and a published author of the number one new release, Great Sex Never Gets Old, Health, Hormones, and Having It All After 40. Her second book, Playing the Long Game, is set to be released later this year. She's in the process of having all her providers functional medicine certified through A4M. I'm the guy asking the questions you'd be asking if you were in front of her today. Look, I run a fitness company. Why am I sitting here talking about PCOS and endometriosis and GLP-1s? And the truth is 80% of our members are women, and most of them over 55. And every single week I hear stories about bodies that stopped responding to the old rules decades ago. My job, and the reason I wrote my book, is to take the burden off and make this simple. And so it's really funny. My wife, Tiffany, and I were actually scheduled to come to Denver already this week because Tiffany works with Kimberly Cunningham. And then all of a sudden, a few days ago, our Instagram starts blowing up and you're getting phone calls like crazy. And so we called producer Ben and said, I think we should jump on a plane and do some follow-up episodes just to add some clarity here. So what I really want to do before we dive in is just let people know we are here to help. Our heart is to help as many people as we can and to keep these things simple. And so normally, one of the principles of our podcast is to keep these things super short. And last time I recorded with Kimberly, I was like, look, let's just do this in 15 or 20 minutes, which as you can imagine, we're talking big, huge conversations about big, huge, sensitive topics and squeezing and condensing those into 15 or 20 minute episodes. So we're going to give Kimberly a little bit more time and we're going to do this over a 3-part series. And we're going to start today with episode number 1 on PCOS. So all that being said, Kimberly, welcome.
Thanks.
Well, welcome to your clinic.
Yeah, we've turned the table. We're at my place today.
Exactly. Yeah. So thanks for hosting us.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to dive right in. I've got 10 or 11 questions that I think are follow-ups from stuff that's come in from Instagram and different messages, and we can start there.
Perfect.
Cool. All right, so the first topic here, the Instagram clips went viral, and there were a lot of tears, like I said. Before we get into the science, though, what do you think people were really responding to?
So especially with PCOS, there's often a weight an overweight component to that disease process or illness process. And a lot of women are holding both the physical weight of the things that have gone wrong, as well as this guilt and this other weight. And they often feel not heard, blamed, not seen as someone who actually has something that needs to be treated and taken care of. And I think that what I was reading, and I saw patients all week, so I didn't get to read through as many of the comments that I wanted to, because there were thousands of them. That was an interesting, it's been an interesting week.
It has been.
But what really with the parts that I could read through, and we responded to some of them as we got to them, was just feeling heard and feeling seen and feeling validated that something is actually wrong. And also maybe that there's some hope that we might be able to do something about it.
Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the paradigm with PCOS is, hey, you have this stuff going on because you're overweight. So it's your fault. Is that right?
That's what a lot of women have been told.
Right.
Either from society, from societal influences, or even, unfortunately, sometimes from their providers.
Yeah. Okay. All right, good. That leads right into this next one. So I want to clarify, in the first clip, you talked about the moral problem at the refrigerator, which I thought was such a great line. And honestly, most people read it and felt relief from what I could tell. And others, some offense. So can you just walk us through what that actually meant?
Sure. And comments can be taken the way they're intended or you know, the worst possible way. And so what I meant was there's this old way of looking at body composition. Mm-hmm. With calories in equal and calories out equals what your weight is. So what you're putting in your mouth versus how much you exercise equals, you know, do you have a healthy body composition? And that's not true. That's actually not true. Women with PCOS have metabolic dysfunction that changes the way they use calories. And so calories in and exercise don't equal your body size. And what the message I was trying to convey is that's not your fault.
Right.
You weren't making mistakes necessarily in what you're choosing for nutrition.
Right.
More than likely is healthcare was making mistakes in giving you the right medication to treat the disease process you had going on. So it's not a moral failing of the patient. It's a medical failing of the provider. Either because we didn't have these tools, we didn't understand what we understand now, or someone hasn't read and kept up. So there's, not to put all of the blame on providers, of course, but I wanted the women with this condition to let go of any self-imposed guilt.
Yeah, and I saw that in the comments. I saw lots of people say, hey, I agree. I've been watching my diet for years. I was eating keto. I'm watching my calories or paleo, whatever the case may be, and not getting the results I want. And yet you go back to the physician. And I get it, right? Physicians are busy. It's a big, broad world, and it's an ever-evolving world. And so to your point, not blaming any physician in particular, but to focus on those things and then to go into a physician and then say, well, you just need to do the right things would be heartbreaking, right? And that's what you meant there.
Yeah, and the third provider who says, have you thought about cutting carbs?
Right. And I didn't mean to laugh, but I've had my own experience with that stuff, and it's just, it's sad, honestly.
Women with PCOS that are not hormone balanced and GLP balanced could do a water fast, 3 days of water, and gain weight.
Wow.
So it is clearly not calories in versus calories out.
Sure.
It is what is the metabolic basis of this human's body.
Right. Okay, good. All right. So then... Yeah. Let's set the foundation. What is PCOS? What causes it, and why has it been misunderstood for so long?
So polycystic ovarian syndrome itself is a condition where the ovary is supposed to ovulate one egg every other month. So you've got a right and a left ovary, women do, and so there'll be January, February, March, April, one egg comes out of one side every other month.
I didn't know that.
And I had a patient say, how do you know I ovulated on the right side in January? And I said, I don't. You might have been a left side in January, but it's every other month.
Sure. You had a 50% chance.
In a regularly hormonally intact, metabolically intact female, it's every other month.
Okay.
There's a genetic SNP that says both ovaries ovulate every month, and that's where you get fraternal twins instead of identical twins. Oh. Those run in families, and that's carried.
I'm a fraternal twin, by the way.
Yeah. So that's. But that is carried on the X chromosome, I believe.
Okay.
So you would not be giving your children that.
Thank goodness.
Allele. twins are fun.
Sure.
I don't have them, but I've heard they're fun. So at any rate, normal ovulation, one egg per side.
Okay.
And there's this whole, I don't know if you remember sixth grade biology, the whole ovulatory cycle is typically 28 days. And there's this big surge about 14 days in that... elicits an ovulation. So the egg comes out of the ovary, and that's ovulation.
Okay.
And so in PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, both ovaries are trying to mature eggs or follicles all the time.
Oh.
And so they're covered in all of these follicles or cysts which is trying to ovulate that egg. And what happens is many months, there's no ovulation because none of them are good enough to actually achieve ovulation.
They're just on overdrive, so to speak. Yep.
So that all are getting ready and none actually pop out.
Oh.
And so when the woman doesn't ovulate, the egg doesn't come out, that little cyst that's left is called the corpus luteum.
Okay.
That is where she gets more than 90% of her progesterone. There's no progesterone.
Yeah.
So polycystic ovarian syndrome, when we don't have regular ovulation, we get estrogen dominance because progesterone keeps estrogen in check.
I see.
With no ovulation and no progesterone from that little tiny cyst, which takes about 14 days to involute.
Yeah.
And then when the progesterone falls off, the estrogen tumbles with it and you get a period.
Okay.
Because we didn't have pregnancy, which is a whole different chemical, biochemical cascade we're not going to go into. But no ovulation equals no progesterone or very little.
Okay.
And so that estrogen doesn't have a signal to say stop, and it just goes up and up and up and up.
Wow.
And so we have this estrogen dominance, which is weight gain, which is prediabetes often, which is breast tenderness and extra development. We just have this body that isn't functioning well. Can also be some moodiness. So with this estrogen dominance, we have a body that's hormonally non-balanced and we have problems.
On average, I don't know if you can answer this. And again, for those listening, everybody's different. We understand that.
Right. I'm talking in generalities.
Yes, in generalities. But like by what multiple are most people higher on their estrogen levels with PCOS than the normal or average when without PCOS?
Almost all of them in some months, but not all months.
Okay.
So if we get a lab of hormones, that's a Polaroid.
Okay.
Not a movie.
Okay.
So this snapshot of this second in time when the blood came out of her arm, was she estrogen dominant?
Got it.
Does that mean she's estrogen dominant 8 months out of the year, 3 months out of the year? This is hormone whack-a-mole. Because some months she can achieve ovulation, and in those months we have some progesterone. Now, PCOS, some of the data is showing that they are progesterone resistant.
Okay.
So if they can achieve ovulation and can produce their own progesterone, they might be resistant at the receptor site level to progesterone.
Okay.
Which still is going to be an estrogen dominant state. And they can be estrogen dominant without having too high of estrogen. Because if you just don't have the progesterone working right at the receptor site, any estrogen is too much.
So this is a ratio that defines dominant.
How much is in the blood and then how much is working at the cellular level.
Okay.
So how much did you make and how much is clicking into a receiver? So this is very complicated.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. So with PCOS, what we have found over the last few years, now that we've gotten better laboratory testing, we talked in another episode about liquid chromatography, mass spectrometry, and that's the molecular weight of the hormone instead of immunoassay, which can be up to 40% off. So with this LC-MS and these more sophisticated labs, we're actually able to get an accurate sex hormone binding globulin level. SHBG does what its name says. It binds up your sex hormones. In women with PCOS, their SHBG in general is often much, much lower.
Which would have more free hormones in the blood then.
Uh-huh. So now any level of testosterone that is produced is unbound. So they might have a normal level of testosterone total, but it's all free to work. And so it's spilling over from past its testosterone receptor sites. And when you have too much of anything, it's going to find something else to do. It's kind of like a puppy without a job. That's not a good idea.
Right.
It's going to find something to do.
Right.
And so when this testosterone goes too high, based on not total, but what's free to click in, now we get spillover into DHT. Now we get spillover into other receptor sites. And in PCOS, we see facial hair. We see jawline acne. We see fat redistribution. We see hair loss.
And this is because the testosterone is actually too high.
It's not too high.
Or there's too much free.
Testosterone is too high.
So that was one question I wanted to clarify.
Too much is unbound.
Yes. Okay. So that was another one that people were asking about and you just clarified it. It was actually that because of the SHGB, the free testosterone is high, not low. And I think we got something mixed up in the comments there.
No, so. But what we had talked about in that episode, we were talking about what happens when they age. It's still going to fall. Testosterone production will still fall in women in the United States around age 35. Now, for women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, the testosterone piece usually evens out pretty well around that age. because her total is coming down to where it's actually her therapeutic level, which is lower because her SHBG is lower.
Right. Okay.
So she probably feels pretty good for about 5 years. The acne clears up. The facial hair starts getting better. She doesn't have this androgen dominant state.
Where most people would be feeling worse.
They feel a little better.
They're feeling a little better because their free was so high, it's coming down into a good feeling.
Yes. So I don't treat to the total testosterone. That's not helpful.
Yeah.
In this clinic, we only treat when we're doing hormone replacement therapy to their free testosterone, not the total. Mm-hmm. What's free to work?
It reminds me of the type of lab you run that's much
liquid
more...
Liquid chromatography mass spectrometry, also shortcutted as LCMS or MS assay.
LCMS. I can do that one.
Sounds like I'm going to be in a TV show.
Right.
You have to order it special, and it's typically not covered by insurance.
Okay.
Which is why our labs, we don't take insurance for them. We negotiated a really good cash price for those through LabCorp. LabCorp, Access Labs, Quest are the three that I know have LCMS, and they have enough of the machines to where it's not so expensive.
Okay.
I mean, it used to be $1,000 extra per blood draw. And we're not going to do that because it's cost prohibitive. But now that it's $100 more, now we're going to do it.
Well, that's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like CAT scans, when they first came out, it was like $20,000 for a CAT scan, and I can get one for like $250. So.
Well, and what's the value, right? If it's that much more accurate and you can help somebody, you've got to do this.
Yes.
Right.
But not for $3,000 more a year.
I agree.
But for $300 more a year, now we can probably make this happen. So why it's important is women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, should they live long enough, will go through testosterone depletion. And then after menopause, estrogen depletion. How to replace their hormones, it has to be very specific, very careful, because if you treat a woman with PCOS like you treat a regular woman going through testosterone deficiency and or menopause, mm-hmm. you're just going to put her right back into a rough state.
Right.
So that's what we were talking about in that other episode when we talk about how to replace testosterone, because it will eventually fall. So how we replace it has to be based off of that sex hormone binding globulin,
right.
not her weight. There's lots of other ways to dose testosterone. And in this clinic, we only dose off of the sex hormone binding globulin.
Right.
So that's how we can be very careful and get someone with PCOS and testosterone deficiency, because she's 55 years old, back to being able to build muscle and have a libido and all the things we want from testosterone without putting her right back into that androgen overload state that she probably experienced when she was younger.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's just a careful piece to it.
Yeah.
We still are going to have to replace it at some point. But we want to make sure we know how to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, great. Okay. I'm going to keep rolling here because this is so good. And I want to give us space to answer all the questions that we need to answer. And then also not be like one of those podcasts out there that are 4 hours long. I'm not going to name any names, but anyways.
So I love some of those actually.
I love them too. It just takes me forever to get through them. So tell us a little bit more about the Swiss or Swedish research you referenced. There were people were using different comments.
Right.
Who did it? What it actually found and what it suggests about the metabolic underpinnings of PCOS.
Right. So the journal that I read it in first is actually a European journal that is a collection of other journals. I have access to that through one of my healthcare provider conglomerate sites, and one of your readers found it. It actually was from Moscow first.
Okay.
So it actually, I don't read Cyrillic. I don't read Russian.
I heard you can kind of read a little Russian.
Okay. I took a little Russian in high school and college, but in no way do I read it. Certainly not a medical study.
And I won't put you on the spot.
I think I've got 20 words in Russian still. Let's never work. Yeah. Меня зовут Kimberly. There you go. My name is Kimberly.
You sound like a badass. I love it.
Yeah. No. So, the one that I was quoting was out of Russia. It was a Moscow study that people probably aren't going to be able to access. So what we're going to do, and I think you're going to do this, there are some National Institutes of Health and PubMed free in English, either citing that data or citing other data, because that's not the only one.
Sure.
So there are different groups that have looked at peritoneal fluid, which is the fluid around your guts and your reproductive organ is below the diaphragm.
Okay.
Peritoneal cavity, this thoracic cavity. So down in the stomach, more than once, study scientists have pulled off the peritoneal fluid and checked for GLP and GIP.
Okay.
And so what the Moscow study showed, what other studies have showed, and we'll show them, is that there is a significant, a statistically significant and often severe deficiency of GLP and GIP.
Yeah.
Some of them only looked at GLP, some looked at both. I think we have three we're going to post.
Yeah.
And looking at that. So what that means, and one of your questions earlier, I didn't answer on purpose because I figured this one was
good,
is what causes PCOS? We don't know.
Yeah.
Is it initially a gynecological disorder? So does it arise in the female reproductive system? Or is it a metabolic disorder? Does it arise from metabolic dysfunction or dysbiosis? And then the PCOS is the symptom, but not the cause.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know what it's downstream from.
It's a chicken and egg.
Yeah.
Which came first? My suspicion is that PCOS is not an FSH-LH signaling from the brain ovarian response dysfunction.
Okay.
I suspect that it's actually a metabolic starting point where it's a GLP-GIP deficiency.
Okay.
Because we keep seeing patients get better, not cured, the symptoms get better, the number of incidence is how often things go awry and how severe, how bad they are when they go awry, are trending towards this gets much better if we correct the missing GLP-GIP signal.
Right.
So GLP and GIP are peptides. They're made in the small intestine. One is made in the duodenum and the jejunum. Another one's made further down. Just like insulin coming off the pancreas, we know they have a role in sugar metabolism, carbohydrate metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
In the human body, but also GLP and GIP have signaling, lots of different signaling jobs to do.
Like most hormones.
Yeah.
It's a messenger.
And so these two peptides, are the peptides because of their amino chain lengths? Are they into the hormone because they're longer ones? It doesn't matter. These signals produced in the small intestine, when they are absent, what's happening in the peritoneal cavity is an upregulation of multiple pro-inflammatory cytokines.
Which makes sense.
So now we have an inflamed situation.
Mm-hmm.
Things don't go well when they're inflamed.
Right.
And then we also have this change in macrophagic activity. Your macrophages are your white blood cells that like to gobble and clear debris, viruses, bacteria, the junk.
Mm-hmm.
They stop working correctly.
This is a part of the immune system.
Mm-hmm. So we have immune system dysfunction in the absence of these two small intestine produced peptides.
Mm.
Now, you know, type 1 diabetes, someone said, you don't make, it's not a zero, it's a diminished. Type 1 diabetes, we usually say they don't make insulin. And that's how we just categorize it. And then type 2 diabetes is you make insulin, but it's your cells are becoming resistant to it because you've had too much blood sugar for too long.
Right.
Type 1 diabetics still make some insulin. It's just not enough. And so obviously they need medication, which is insulin. So women with PCOS might make some GLP and GIP, but the data sets that we're referencing are showing that it's not going to be enough.
Okay.
It's diminished to the point where, just like in a type 1 diabetic, it's diminished to the point where we really should look at replacing what is missing.
And this is where, and this was the last time I checked, which was a few days ago, we had 10,000 shares with women doing like, oh my God, yes, prayer hands, right? Or high fives, or because they are experiencing real relief and real increases in their quality of life from this stuff.
Yep.
So it's just a reminder that evidence can be broad and anecdotal evidence matters too.
It does.
And for somebody that is going from a miserable life to a much better life, for me, that's where the conversation should sit.
And statistically significant small studies beget the larger ones.
Right.
To my knowledge, we only have the small ones so far. Meta-analyses are looking at all of the small ones together. It's always better to have one big trial. But, you know, medical research is fraught with pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
You think you've designed this perfect study, and there's a little caveat here or there. Lots of people love to pull them apart, and that's but I want people to keep looking.
Right.
When we look at polycystic ovarian syndrome as what if it's a metabolic disease first? What if it didn't arise from the female reproductive system? Mm-hmm. What if it arose from a metabolic place? Mm-hmm. To me, that's a paradigm shift in how we look at it.
Right.
And then when we look at how to treat, We're going to look at, let's fix the metabolic dysbiosis first, which is what I like to do. And then let's see what else we need to treat.
Right.
Because if she could start ovulating regularly, maybe I don't have to start treating the lack of endogenous progesterone production. So there's, if I always, functional medicine always says, go up and up and up and up until you find the most basic reason for all of these things downstream.
Right.
And so I think the more elegant and specific the solution,
yeah,
the better all of the downstream parts and pieces. That doesn't mean I'm not going to reach for some of those tools, but if I can reach for what I think is causing it or causing the process to be the worst first, mm-hmm, then maybe I don't need as many tools downstream.
And I love that you used the phrase paradigm. We've talked in a lot of other episodes about my health journey, and this is the point of functional medicine, mm-hmm, from my perspective, is practitioners and people that are willing to ask that different question so they can think outside the box and begin to help people. You kind of mentioned this a little bit, but what about fertility? Are a lot of people are asking whether or not they can conceive on these medications. And you said GLP, GIP, we talked about tirzepatide, which I think is the off-label name for...
So tirzepatide is the generic name for Mounjaro.
Okay.
Semaglutide is the generic name for Ozempic.
Okay.
Retatrutide, which is the newest GLP that is not commercially available yet, I don't think has a brand name.
We talked about that in the prior episode.
Retatrutide is the generic name.
Okay. Hmm? So fertility?
So let me start by saying I'm not a fertility expert.
Yeah.
I'm not, this is not a fertility clinic. I am not an OBGYN. When we are looking at, in healthcare, a woman who is not ovulating regularly, there are lots of reasons for fertility to be problems. PCOS is one of them. Mm-hmm. PCOS often does not exist in a vacuum. So she might have multiple reasons for infertility.
Right.
And her partner has a job to do in the fertility as well.
Yeah.
So always, if there are fertility issues, you start with a fertility specialist,
yeah,
making sure any underlying impairment to conception has been identified, addressed, and mitigated.
Yeah.
Especially with fertility, there is the component of time and we will run out of it. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to just chase one little thing at a time and give it years.
Right.
So if there's fertility issues, you start with a fertility specialist.
Cool.
I have patients that I share with fertility clinics here in Denver.
Okay.
And I play really nicely in the sandbox with other providers. We talk regularly and we talk about, you know, how can I help? Because, you know, maybe I have access to a compounding pharmacy that could be helpful.
Yeah.
But as far as whether or not to be on the GLP-1 during fertility treatments, mm-hmm, that is a decision made by the fertility specialist.
Okay. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of person, if any,
There's one other thing there.
Yeah.
And Eli Lilly and the makers of Ozempic also have warning statements out there that if you start this medication and you think you're not fertile, you might be.
Yes.
And so you want to make sure if you don't want to conceive that you have a very efficient form of birth control, because if you think you can't get pregnant because you never have, and then there's a medication that fixes the likely metabolic disorder,
right,
that led to the not ovulating state. Ovulating is an egg.
Right.
Sperm meeting the egg is a pregnancy potentially. So,
which is to say, like, there are people kind of answering that question, because we saw this in the comments, that have gotten on these medications and were shocked that they got pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What kind of person, if any, with PCOS does not do well on these medications? Like, who should maybe think twice?
So they're, with polycystic ovarian syndrome, we almost always see the low sex hormone binding globulin. We almost always see the elevated hemoglobin A1C, which is a 3-month average of her blood sugars.
Okay.
And so when we see the low SHBG and we see the elevated hemoglobin A1C, we're already suspicious of PCOS with or without the diagnosis, which the diagnosis is a transvaginal ultrasound wand looking at the ovaries to see if there are multiple cysts.
Okay.
And that is also that moment in time.
Right.
So if she's not polycystic that month,
it does not mean.
That doesn't mean she's not polycystic other times.
Right.
So getting a diagnosis
thing.
So hard to get a diagnosis.
Because it's like, we've got to follow, this is going to be a journey. Yeah.
Well, to me, the definitive diagnosis for PCOS is a clinical presentation that matches PCOS with the low sex hormone binding globulin.
Okay.
To me, that's That's enough.
So if somebody's going into their doctor or they suspect they might have PCOS, mm-hmm. they've gone to the physician before, they did one or two of these quick things and they said, no, you don't. What should that person do? What lab should they ask for and what kind of provider should they look for?
Well, the lab that I like is the sex hormone binding globulin, and it has to be done through liquid chromatography, mass spectrometry, also known as MS assay.
Okay.
So that's the lab. And then that number, that LC-MS MS assay through LabCorp, if that is less than 40,
okay.
I'm highly suspicious of PCOS. If there's a clinical presentation that matches PCOS as well, then I'm going to go ahead and treat that woman as if she has PCOS.
Okay.
And I'm going to be very careful if I reach for testosterone replacement. I'm going to be very careful in how I do other hormone balancing.
Wait.
And then that lets me know, based on the studies, and we're going to publish, you're going to put some links to those,
yep.
that she probably is going to do very well on a GLP-1.
Cool.
Now, there's three. There's the original semaglutide, which is GLP. There's the newer tirzepatide that's GLP and GIP. Right. And then the newest one isn't out yet, but it's going to be GLP, GIP plus glucagon.
Okay.
Now, there are women who don't do well on either Ozempic, semaglutide, or Mounjaro, tirzepatide. And the studies coming out about retatrutide are looking like they're going to do better on that one because when you add glucagon, which is a peptide hormone made by the liver, when you add that to the GLP and GIP, it's a more complete correction. So probably in PCOS, there's a glucagon deficiency as well. Glucagon from the liver tells her body to use fat for fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have someone who's resistant to tirzepatide, or they lost a little bit of weight and then it just stopped and isn't working anymore, and we always want to be very careful and not go up on the dose too quickly. Even if we go up on the dose very slowly, we're still just stuck. And I have an in-body, I'll put them on to look at what's the body fat percentage and what's the muscle mass percentage. And if her body fat percentage just isn't budging, then that tells me she's probably deficient of glucagon and she doesn't have the signal to tell her body it's okay to cut fat.
Okay.
So that's coming and that's exciting.
Wild.
Yeah.
And I'm probably misunderstanding this, but that's really cool to me because as we look at the evolution of these drugs, we're seeing these new drugs with these additions to them.
More peptides.
And so it's obvious to the researchers and the people putting these drugs together that there's a whole story going on here, which is why we are seeing the evolution of them, including more of that story, so to speak. That's so cool.
But we want to be careful. People get excited about retatrutide because they lost a lot of body fat very quickly in the studies. That doesn't necessarily mean everybody should have the strongest one. So if someone's metabolically inflexible and if they've got a grain of rice or carbohydrate anywhere in their GI tract, they won't switch to fat for fuel.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just shut down. So that's what I mean by metabolically yeah. inflexible. For those people, that's going to be a good tool. If you're not metabolically inflexible, don't know that we're going to want to reach for the big gun.
Right, right.
Let's go with tirzepatide and see how we do.
Okay.
So that's where we're going to be in my practice. Different clinicians will read the data and come to their own conclusions.
Well, that leads to a good wrap-up question.
Yep.
And then in episode two, we're going to go back into endometriosis. But you're talking about some things that I think are really important here. Not all drugs are created equal for all different people. Titrating. I've seen people in my own life that got these through some physicians that are maybe a little less familiar with them. And so the answer was, if it's not working, I'll just dose you up. So what's the one thing you wish every woman with PCOS understood?
First of all, PCOS was never your fault. You had a genetic predisposition for this, or something happened along the way that we haven't really figured out yet that puts you into this situation, and you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And so I want women with PCOS who are carrying guilt weight to let that go, because you didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't your fault. I also want women with PCOS to know that we learn more every day. I mean, the last 5 years with the discovery of GLP-1s for treating not just type 2 diabetes, but medical weight loss, and medical weight loss led to, well, wait a minute, a lot of these women who need medical weight loss also have PCOS. Okay, wait a minute, let's check their peritoneal fluid and see, do they actually have a deficiency of GLP and GIP? Oh, guess what they do?
Right.
So now we have a metabolic issue. Might the metabolic issue be the cause of the PCOS? So maybe we were looking in the wrong place.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're not going to fix all of the parts of it, including the gynecological ones, but it's been a very rapid, exciting chunk of time. And so don't give up hope, because we have some tools that are becoming really relevant in the management, not the cure. We can't cure things, but we could manage and ameliorate or lessen the effects of this. And the tools are getting more and more elegant and more specific. So keep hope.
Yeah. I love it. I've heard people talk about GLPs and they're comparing them to AI and comparing them to other things in the sense of just how rapid the exponential our learning has been and how it will continue. So I love that. Keep hope. It's not your fault. And from my perspective, you've got to be the CEO of your own health. And so you've got to take this stuff in your own hands by finding the right providers like Kimberly, people like Kimberly who are ready to work with a team like a fertility physician, et cetera, and meet you where you are and go from there. So thank you for doing this follow-up on this one. I'm excited to get into the next episode, and we'll do just that here in a few minutes.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in to the FastFit podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at fastfit.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make exercise simple, empowering, and a part of a life well-lived. See you next time.